I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Nash.
And this is Building Bridges. Sparks are flying as Congress tries to force Biden's contract down the railroad workers' throats. The current move by President Biden and Congress to impose a contract on 115,000 railroad workers, a contract that the members of rail unions representing the majority of those workers have rejected. It's an unconscionable attack on rail workers, the labor movement, and the entire U.S. working class.
The right to strike is a fundamental human right and one of the most effective tools working people have to win justice from the greedy railroad bosses and capitalist oligarchs who increasingly seek to control not only our economy and our government, but every aspect of our lives.
Railroad workers are fighting for basic human freedoms. Harkening back to the Memphis striking sanitation workers' demands to recognize their humanity and to be treated with dignity expressed on their picket signs, they carried, "I am a man."
So join our virtual picket line now in support of the railway workers led by J.P. Johnson, former French conductor, now locomotive fireman at Amtrak and steering committee member of Railroad Workers United. Paul Lindsay, Union Pacific rail engineer and steering committee member of Railroad Workers United. Mary Lee Taylor, freight engineer, and Maximilian Alvarez, editor-in-chief at the Real News Network, covering labor disputes.
We're making this into our virtual labor rally, so I hope everybody's got their picket signs held high. And it's not just for the union bosses at this point. It's clearly for the Congress as well and the president. Maximilian, maybe you can put it in a historic context. This goes to if they do take any action, the workers, and we, of course, hope they do and will be there to stand with them. But what are the consequences and what does it mean since Biden has really raised the specter and the Congress has of what is the 1929 late Railroad Act?
1926.
Yeah, 1926 is the best date. If you don't mind, Max, could I say a couple words first?
Go for it.
In terms of what the government has done, they have made it clear to workers throughout this country, no matter where you work, internationally, that they clearly are on the side of the carriers here. We never asked for intervention. I'm not just discussing those of us on this call. I mean, rail workers were not clamoring for intervention. We were clamoring for the government to stay out. Because, and here we see what happens. The alleged most pro union president in the world or whatever came down and scabbed on a strike. That was a strike bait breaking move. He's a strike breaker. We call that
He's a scab. Absolutely he is.
So, and I think coming out of this, and I want to talk before Max because, first of all, I want to give him a plug. He has told the truth about our struggle, and he's helped us bring that truth out. Major media has the vested interest in not speaking about the multi-billionaires and what they're doing, not in rail or anywhere else, because owners are actually part of it. They don't want their stuff touched either. They don't want their workforce unionizing. And they certainly don't want to hear a lot of the things we have raised. Although some of it has come out just simply because of the incredible interest and support for rail workers in this country, including from people who have said, both in media, print, and TV media, as well as social media, I'm not worried about getting Christmas presents. I stand with rail workers. We can make it through this. And that's what these people are so afraid of. I'm talking about the moneyed classes, Wall Street, the 0.1% that owns. And that's who they pretty much own in terms of the media. There's only 6 major corporations that own virtually all the media in this country. And that's not controlled by you or your station or you and me or Max's station, but the people that have really stepped forward, like Max, to get our story out. Because I think the overwhelming vast majority of Americans, in the entire country are willing to stand on the side of rail labor if they can only hear our story. The railroads themselves is who kept putting out the narrative. They keep putting out these lies. It's all absurd.
And we are speaking with the marvelous Merrilee Taylor, freight engineer.
And Max, tell us more about this dastardly congressional action in effectively outlawing strikes. What happens to somebody if they go on strike in the railroads?
Well, I mean, first, I just want to say how humbled I am by the amazing compliments from everyone here. It really means the world to me, and it's been an honor to be in this struggle with, you know, Railroad Workers United and everyone fighting to have their voices heard. If I can help in any way to lift up the lives, voices, and struggles of our fellow workers, that, in my view, is a life's work, and I'm honored to commit my life to that work. And I want to pick up, Ken, I'll end up at that question about what happens now, but I just want to kind of pick up on what Merrilee was saying, because I think that this is really important for everyone. You guys listening to us now, you probably have noticed the same thing that all of us in this country have, which is everything is being gobbled up by a handful of companies. The rich are getting exponentially richer in this country while wages for working people have been stagnant, quality of life has been going down, cost of living has been going up, the quality of the services and products that we depend on has been going down at the same time that all of that corporate consolidation has been going on. That's not an accident. This is what corporate America's plan is for all of us. The promise and the whole social contract of a capitalist economy is that competition between companies and firms ensures that the best products win out, that ultimately these companies are there to serve their customers, which is us, so we have more of a say in the quality of the goods and services that we purchase. Now, that does not happen when you have a system where corporate consolidation takes off, and essentially you have a handful of mega corporations owning literally everything, and they have managed to eliminate all sense of competition, and then you get something completely different. And in fact, that is what we have on the railroads. In 1980, there were over 40 major railroad companies. Over the past 40 years, that has consolidated to 7, soon to be 6. In that same amount of time, over those 4 decades, the railroads used to have over 500,000 workers working on them, and they have slashed and burned their workforce down to around 130,000. Like, think of that catastrophic loss of years of experience, of all the skill of the kinds of workers like Merrilee, Paul, and everyone at Railroad Workers United. I mean, like, you cannot just replace all of that lost skill and experience, and yet the railroads have been deliberately gutting their own workforce for that whole time. So the question is, why, right? You know, because again, as a consumer, you might think, well, the freight railroads, their whole business model is to move as much freight as possible because that's how they make money. Not so fast. In fact, when Wall Street took over the railroads, they realized that they could, in fact, make more money by moving less freight and cutting their operating costs year after year after year. This is not a competitive market. Rail carriers have a non-competitive oligopolistic cartel where they essentially all have their own territories in the country. There are shippers who have no choice but to use the freight railroads because you're not going to be able to offload all of that onto trucks. No one's out here building new rail lines, so again, there's no competition there. So what the rail carriers learned is they could just capture their own customers, jack up the prices on them as much as possible, while on the labor side, cutting their labor costs year after year after year, piling more work onto fewer workers, making workers work 20, just these like horrendous hours, under draconian attendance policies that make it impossible for them to actually have a semblance of a life outside of work. Because, again, in the minds of the rail bosses, this is all about how do we squeeze as much profit out of this industry as we can. They don't care that the quality of service on the freight railroads has been going down year after year. They don't care that the quality of life of rail workers on the railroads has been going down year after year. All they care about is the record profits that we've been talking about. And this is what I really want to stress to people, is that, you know, the mainstream media and Biden and Congress, everyone right now is talking about how we, you know, averted a quote-unquote crisis, thank God, right? Little Timmy's going to get to have his Christmas because Biden did the hard choice and forced workers from striking, forced them to accept a subpar contract, yada, yada, yada. What you need to understand, dear listener, is that the crisis is already here, and you are already paying for it. You know, the media kept saying, oh, if there's a rail strike, it's going to cost the U.S. economy $2 billion a day. Well, I want to know how much it is costing the U.S. economy that the ports are backed up because we are moving less freight, because the freight carriers don't want to move more freight because they fired everybody. I want to know how much it's costing the U.S. economy that workers are quitting this industry in record numbers, and so trains are lying idle on, you know, rail lines, and things are moving more slowly. And again, the prices that shippers are paying and are passing off into the consumers, how much is that costing all of us? No one can even muster a guess. And again, by forcing this contract down workers' throats, Biden and Congress have essentially told the rail carriers, yeah, keep doing what you're doing. That's fine. You know, we don't care. All we care about is that we avert a railroad strike now. And the thing is you are going to get the effect of a strike whether you want one or not, because as workers have been telling me all year, if this is how this process is going to end up, if Biden is just going to pull the rug out from under us at the end and the rail carriers are going to keep doing what they've been doing for years and decades, then I'm quitting. And so you're going to have more talented, essential workers leaving this industry that is already having a hard time hiring and retaining people. And so that is going to mean more trains lying idle. It's going to mean slower, less freight being moved. It's going to mean more costs passed on to consumers. So the effect of a strike is coming. We've just given the rail carriers everything that they want.
As I said, we said sparks were going to fly, and they're flying. And, you know, one of the things that, so the question is, hey, what is to be done? And I know that there were a number of things. One of the things that I was had found out, which I didn't even realize when they imposed this contract, the Congress and so on, and couldn't even deal with a darn cooling off period. Good gracious. It took the Republicans manipulatively. They're not our friends. But they even could mention a cooling off period for 60 days. But no. And if the workers do go on strike, they face jail time. Hey, how's that? So, Paul, Lindsay, JP, weigh in on this. So what is to be done? Do we say, what the hell, you know, you can't lock up a whole workforce? What are the positions of the militant rank and file there, if not the unions that have voted down the contracts?
And should we nationalize the railways?
We need to nationalize the American railroads and make them publicly owned and operated. There's historical precedent for that as well.
JP is not suggesting some radical idea like just making some sort of Amtrak freight railroad monstrosity. That's not what he's talking about at all. What we're talking about is treating the railroads something similar to the interstate highways. Currently, we don't have privately owned highways in the United States. Trucking companies, private trucking firms that compete with each other, they pay rent, essentially, to use our private highway system. And because of that, they have open access everywhere, and no one trucking company can just blindly shut off access to other trucking companies. And that's really what we're suggesting. And it sounds radical on face value to say public ownership of the railroads, of the railroad infrastructure, keep in mind, but it really is not. It's actually, I would venture to say, more capitalist and free market than any system that we have now, because it actually allows for competition. it actually allows a system where railroads compete for business and that they are held accountable when they don't provide customers with the rail service that they need to have.
Well, Amtrak is a public rail service also in the public sector.
It is, but Amtrak is also very, very misunderstood. I would mention with Amtrak that passenger rail service all used to be provided by private rail companies. And when you go back to when Amtrak was created because of a big portion because of what the government did in failing to upgrade their regulatory structure. They put the railroad industry basically out of business. Because of that, railroads were unprofitable in the 70s and into the 80s. They couldn't afford to provide passenger service anymore, even though they were required to by law. So the federal government took over and said, okay, well, I'll tell you what, we'll create this new private for profit government owned corporation, and it will provide the passenger service. And all you'll have to do is donate your passenger equipment and allow us to run on your rails, and we'll take away this obligation from you. But it was kind of supposed to be a temporary measure. It wasn't really supposed to be a permanent measure. You look at it now, really, these railroads, as much as they spend on share buybacks, surely they could afford to actually provide passenger service again. And with the obsession that they have toward efficiency, you would think they could make a profit off of it again. But we're still allowing Amtrak to operate in this situation where we don't give any obligation to the freight railroads.
I'm still seething at Labor Secretary Marty Walsh, yes, who made it clear on CNN Congress would need to intervene. And then we have the spokesperson, Karine Jean-Pierre, who says a shutdown is unacceptable because of the harm it will inflict on jobs and families, which you folks have completely debunked. Then there's Scab Biden, which is what you've called him and what he is, unilaterally ordering the railroad workers to stay on the job. So there's the issue of working towards nationalization, but most immediately, is there any likelihood that the rank and file, which we haven't discussed, that two of you are active in, maybe more, but has thousands upon thousands of workers in it, and that is the Railroad Workers United. Can they call out workers? Is there any likelihood that there will be any job action, notwithstanding the fact that people can be subject to arrest? And good gracious, I'm not cavalier about that, but they've already got their blood, sweat, and tears.
So I believe JP and I are both in unity. We would probably love to see wildcat strikes in this country. And JP, I'm sure we would both love to see that. However,
yeah, I'd write right down there with them. But the heck of it is instead of being put back to work peacefully, we'd probably be put back to work by the touch of the bayonet.
Well, I actually have a little different idea about that. I think that it all depends on how big, that is to say, whatever actions, and we'd be kind of silly to talk concretely about too much, even if we knew them, because it would just be silly. Whatever action any group of workers takes in defense of their own rights on the railroad, I will support and defend, as long as it's done with the understanding of social solidarity, and that is by not doing stupid things to try to get attention to yourself. But any true job action, we will be there. And I will do everything that I can to support, not just in my area, but in whatever talents that I may have. But
Immediately,
I think we have to call on all working people to break with the scab party against the would-be strikers. I think what we have to start to discuss is a party that represents working people, because I don't think we're going to find them in the halls of Congress today.
Well, not only that, but the AFL-CIO, for goodness sakes, has not supported the workers in this either. So you're talking about an independent labor party, Marilee?
I'm not talking about an independent labor party based on the trade unions and the trade union bureaucracies. I'm talking about, as we get together, as we have in RWU, as a rank-and-file caucus across many unions, who are democratic in nature, talk things out, act in a reasonable fashion all around, that is the kind of organization we need. We need to quit with this junk, and we need to be able to spearhead that, and not by some ossified layer of labor bureaucracy, but by the people that we, every single one of us, we look around. Who do we see in motion today in terms of unionism and in terms of just workers' rights? It is a whole new layer coming forward, and that is who we have to reach out to and combine along with, of course, in a much broader way, to figure out what we should be doing and quit relying on these parties that historically, for at least the last 70 years, have operated in tandem against our interests as working people. And we need our own electoral party to represent us in the electoral arena, and what rules it goes by and so on, and something that would have to be discussed. But I just want to raise that clear break with these two parties of the rulers.
So tell us what we as consumers need to do, and as workers, sympathizers, how do we become good allies?
I want to add something that the public could do immediately to spread their awareness of what we're talking about, and it's not just a labor issue, because I believe that railroad workers, separate from a lot of industries, I think we have a disproportionate number of us that do truly, as much as we don't particularly care for the companies we work for, we love our industry and we love what we do, and we want our industry to be around 50, 100 years from now, and we realize that with everything, with climate change, with the need for efficiency, with the rail industry is pivotal into that future. So people need to watch the hearings coming up on December 13th and December 14th against Union Pacific Railroad and their embargoes. It's similar to the hearings that took place in April to realize what these monopolistic oligopolies are doing to our supply chain. So in 2017, Union Pacific, prior to implementing precision scheduled railroading, implemented 17 embargoes, issued 17 embargoes. Embargoes are issued because of weather or some sort of factor that prevents you from providing rail service. 2017.
And what are the hearings? Who's holding them? And are they public hearings?
Surface Transportation Board, and the information that I have is that they're going to be live streamed on YouTube, Surface Transportation Board, STB.gov. These federal hearings are about the Union Pacific, and specifically called in the bigwigs, the CEO, Lance Fritz, to discuss why in 2017 there were 27 embargoes and why this year we're over 1,000 embargoes of customer shipments, because they want to make more money, because they want to shrink the infrastructure and only keep the cream of the crop captive shippers. They want to shrink the industry and extract as much money out of it as possible, just like my colleagues explained. And that is coming out December 13th and 14th in the federal hearings from the Surface Transportation Board. And people need to watch that to understand the monopolistic control that these oligopolies have over our beloved transportation industry, our beloved railroads that we do love.
Just want to hop in on one point. I would really, really highly advise that everyone listening go support Railroad Workers United. It's an incredible organization full of incredible people doing incredible work. So go support them, donate to them, buy their merchandise, lift up their messages. Secondly, I would highly recommend that people look at RWU's proposal for nationalizing the railroads, taking public control, because I just want to really emphasize something that Paul said and something rail workers have been telling me and something I really want people to remember. If the rail industry is too vital to our supply chain, and if rail workers are too essential to the economy, and if rail carriers like the big banks are too big to fail, then this industry, if they are all too much and too essential to sustain a strike, which is what we've been hearing, then they are too important to be controlled by private companies that are vampirically sucking all of the life out of this industry for their own profits. It needs to be in public hands.
You've mentioned the nationalization. You've mentioned supporting, get this right, Railroad Workers United. Railroad Workers United. Solidarity, unity, democracy, the rank and file in action. So maybe 30 seconds apiece. Tell us what you want us to do to support our sister, our brother, our sibling, railroad workers. JP, Paul, Merrily, and Max, you can have the final say.
All I would say is, if you know somebody that's a railroad man or woman, get out there and tell them, you know, that you support them. Give them a handshake. Tell them that you appreciate the job that they're doing, keeping this country rolling. And realize that they love their job and what they're doing, and they take a lot of pride in it. And these companies are ruining that, that pride that they're taking in it. Just get out there and say, I appreciate you, and I really, really appreciate the job you are doing.
And Merrily, 30 seconds, and then Max, take us out.
To every listener out there, I want to ask you, number one, to support us in the most visible, vocal way that you can. That includes going to your own organizations, your PTAs, your classrooms, as students and teachers, your churches, your union, whatever fraternal or professional organization you're involved in, please go to them and ask them to come out in support of us. Make it public, make it visible, join any actions that are called and any picket lines that may be set up at these railroads. And thank you so much for having us today.
Maximilian Alvarez.
Don't be despondent. Don't give up. Fight back however you can. Keep the momentum going. Keep the solidarity going. So get ready and fight hard. And right now, go support the other workers on strike at the University of California, at CNH Industrial, at Warrior Met Coal, the workers at Starbucks. The more that we bring these struggles together, the more of a strong and robust working class we can have. And that is what we need to actually fight against the bosses and the politicians that they have bought off.
And Ken and I are going to say, as we usually do, workers of the world, unite. You have nothing to lose but your chains.
And a world to win.
And indeed, that's the case. Railroad Workers United, support them. Support all the 115,000 railroad workers. And you make your Congress people know that you are sick of their being scabs. We want to especially thank Merrily Taylor, J.P. Johnson, Paul Lindsay, Maximilian Alvarez from The Real News, our compatriot organization. Thanks for listening. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash.
Stay strong. Support the working class.